This is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, go to nature.com/nature/podcast.
First up in the show, we're talking about neuroscience. For obvious reasons, whole brains are difficult things to work with in a lab, and most lab-based neuroscience is done on tissue samples or small cultures of brain cells. But this week in Nature, a paper presents a new way to study brains by plugging them into a machine that partially restores their function. Reporter Nick Howe has been talking to the researchers involved to find out more.
The idea for this study came about from a very routine observation. We and other scientists have observed that viable cells can be harvested from post-mortem brains and cultured in a dish. This indicates that cells in the post-mortem brain still have the capacity to be revived.
This is Nenad Sestan, a professor of neuroscience at Yale School of Medicine. The idea he's talking about is whether it's possible to restore brains after death. When the heart stops beating, brains lose oxygen and begin to deteriorate rapidly. This deterioration was thought to be irreversible.
We were very surprised by this finding, and that's why it took us 5 years before we submitted the paper. We just wanted to be sure that this is what we are seeing.
The team took brains from pigs that had been slaughtered for food production. 4 hours after death, they hooked up the brains to a machine called BrainX. BrainX pumped or perfused a blood-like substance into and out of the removed brains and simulated the function of the heart, lungs, kidneys, and liver. The artificial blood had chemicals in it that the team hoped would encourage the recovery of the brains, such as compounds that prevent cell death. And indeed, by hooking up the brains to BrainX, they were able to revive the cells and restore some functions for around 6 hours.
And what we can show that basically the brain, and that means the cells, is consuming oxygen and glucose, which are two major nutrients, and it's producing CO2 and other metabolites that are a clear sign of that cells are viable.
What's more, Nenad and his team showed that the brains retained some of their functions. They demonstrated inflammatory responses similar to living brains, their synapses were able to fire, and the brains responded to certain drugs.
And we show that basically the cells in our perfused brain have all signs that are associated with normal functioning cells.
This is a striking result, says Simone DiGiovanni, a professor of neuroscience at Imperial College London, who wasn't associated with this study.
I think the extent to which they were able to preserve the survival of many cells into the brain, and the extent to which they were able also to show that there was some function at the cellular level also preserved for many hours. So this was quite surprising and very interesting.
Having restored functions to cells, Nenad and his team believe that isolated brains could be a useful model system for answering neuroscience questions. Simone agrees.
This can be something that we could exploit in the future to understand cellular and molecular mechanisms of disease or of physiology.
So the brains could be useful models for testing drugs or answering neurological questions. They wouldn't be able to answer every question, though, as the brains were not fully functioning. But this was by design. If at any point activity associated with consciousness or sensation was detected, Nenad and his team would have stopped the experiment immediately, on ethical grounds. The brains were not alive, but they weren't exactly dead either.
At the cellular level, these brains are very close to being alive. But if we consider life of a brain as the expression of the functionality of the brain, then they're very, very far from being alive.
In other words, the isolated brains didn't show the organized activity that we see in living brains. they would be unable to learn, remember, or perceive the world. But the individual cells within them showed signs of being alive. Because these brains sit in an in-between zone, being neither alive nor exactly dead, they challenge our assumptions about death itself. Our current understanding is that death means irreversible loss of brain function.
This new research study suggests that that may not be the case.
This is Nita Farahani, a professor of philosophy and law at Duke University.
The irreversibility that we thought existed with the loss of brain function from oxygen deprivation may in fact at least partly be reversible. And if that's the case, our existing definition of death, which is so important to things like being able to declare a human legally dead, so important for us to be able to have that person qualify for organ donation, for example, those things are now fundamentally challenged by the possibility of being able to reverse the damage from loss of oxygen to the brain.
Another consideration is that restoring function to a brain after death could lead to consciousness and sensation. Whilst in this study there was no EEG activity, which is a marker of consciousness, the study used neuronal activity blockers and anesthetic. It's possible that these prevented any form of consciousness arising.
There's still a gap between this study and achieving any kind of consciousness or any kind of sentience-like capabilities, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. It just means that there may be more work to do before it could get there.
This study raises many questions, both scientific and ethical. The study will need to be replicated and attempts made to understand whether consciousness could occur and, if it did, how scientists and society should respond to that possibility. Despite the challenging ethical questions, Nita and her colleagues think it's important that this research continues.
We are enthusiastic about this research and think that it's really important that this research be allowed to proceed. So we're excited about the possibilities that this offers to offer insights into studying the brain. And we also recognize that this research team really is a model for trying to address the ethical questions that research raises, particularly when ethics hasn't caught up with the science.
That was Nita Farahani from Duke University. She and a group of other ethicists have written comment pieces in this week's Nature about the study, which you can find over at nature.com/opinion. You also heard Simone Di Giovanni from Imperial College London and Nenad Sestan from Yale School of Medicine. You can read Nenad's paper over at nature.com.